China. Not China Grove. That's in Texas, right? From the Doobies. But actual China's in Moscow right now. Talking about Ukraine, talking about a variety of things. It's something we got to talk about. And to do that, Dr. Thomas Ambrosio, NDSU political science professor. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Glad to have your expertise on a variety of things, not the least of which is 20 years ago. We'll get to that.
That's right.
Let's start with current affairs, though. China's in Russia. They're talking about, yeah, sure, we can work together. It's my observation. Am I off?
No, actually, well, this is actually just kind of reinforcing the idea that there is a growing alignment. They don't like to use the word alliance, a strategic partnership or friendship that knows no limits, as they say, something like that, between Russia and China, something we are obviously observing very closely because this creates, I don't want to use the term axis, but creates an axis, a Eurasian axis, which has been building. This isn't something new. This has been building, quite frankly, since the mid-90s, largely out of a rejection of American dominance of the international system. Mm-hmm. And given how things are ramping up in terms of great power competition and conflict, this just reinforces that. Also, it says something that President Putin of Russia was just indicted by the International Criminal Court. And President Xi basically went there anyway to meet with him, basically saying, we don't care about that.
Yeah, that's I'm glad you got there because, yeah, it makes headlines. Doesn't really mean anything, does it, as far as the arrest warrant?
The International Criminal Court, yeah. So I'll kind of back up a little bit.
Sure.
The International Criminal Court is it's not a true world court because the only countries it applies to are those countries that have signed up with it. And the United States is not one of those countries. Neither is Russia. Neither is China. What it does is it essentially makes Vladimir Putin a pariah in many countries, at least legally. If his ability to travel throughout the world is now restricted, he can't go to those countries because they technically are obligated to arrest Vladimir Putin. And it simply is it is symbolic. And I think it's very symbolic that Putin has crossed lines, but now something formal has been established.
Been declared.
And this in particular deals with war crimes of transferring children out of Ukraine. And I would not be surprised if it eventually spins into an indictment for crimes against humanity and possibly a crime of genocide, possibly at the end.
So those declarations, I guess is how I'll put them. Like, we declare that you're doing this.
Well, it's actually more like an official arrest warrant.
Okay.
From the ICC, yeah.
So somebody stamped it, but there's going to be no arrest.
No. I can't imagine that would ever be the case unless Russia agreed to hand them over somehow. You know, it happened in Serbia, where President Milosevic of Serbia was handed over to the International Court for Yugoslavia at the time after a revolution, though I don't see that going the way.
Happening in Russia,
right,
yeah.
Right. But it's just symbolic, and it kind of feeds into this war over the information space, over the narrative. A narrative which is accepted as almost a capital T truth in the West, but is not really accepted as truth in the rest of the world.
I was going to ask you that because is this even being covered by Russian media? I mean, if you've seen some of the conversations from the men and women on the streets of Russia and what we've come to know about what's going on, completely different worlds.
Well, they have reported it. It is, of course, spun in their favor. A Russian prosecutor is also indicted. The head of the International Criminal Court, as well as the judges who signed off on the arrest warrant, because it is illegal to, in Russia, it's illegal to knowingly charge an innocent person. So they're charging them with crimes as well. It's just a tit for tat.
Yeah.
This is kind of the game we're playing.
Okay. But you talked about the symbolism. And it's symbolic that China's there right now.
Yeah,
basically
saying,
you know what, who cares?
Yeah.
We're here with you.
We don't care. And in fact, China came out and said this is not helpful, has come out and said that this violates the principle of sovereign or the head of state immunity, that heads of state should be immune to charges, which hasn't been the case since Nuremberg, but you know, who's counting? But it does. The fact that China would still go there says a lot. But what's really concerning for us is not the fact that China's there and that symbolism. It's the danger that China's going to start providing more and more aid to Russia.
As far as weaponry goes, is when you say aid, what do you mean?
There are reports of ammunition from China having already made its way to Russia. Some reports about quote-unquote hunting equipment that has been sent, weapons. And China has resisted doing that because they're afraid of secondary sanctions that we would impose upon China. They may, at a certain point, not care enough. And they may decide, we're going to do what we're
going
to do.
We're going for it. I mean, we've talked about Ukraine being in a proxy war already. I mean, that seems to just amplify it. If, in fact, they're also putting their chips in behind Russia, and we're putting our chips in behind Ukraine. We think about the immediate Russia-Ukraine and how we're doing kind of the proxy, fighting Russia without actually doing it. But it seems like you take it a step further, we're already kind of combating China then.
If China decides to get in deeper, then it almost becomes a proxy war between proxies, between the two of us.
Messy, very messy,
yeah. Which is one reason why I love international politics, because it's just the messiness is something that I thrive on. And just the complexity, because everything is interconnected.
Russia went after one of our drones, Black Sea, and we put out the video saying, yeah, you know, they can lie about what they, it was an accident. Well, here's the proof here. I mean, people were interested. In fact, we had listeners asking to get you on. Said, I want to hear Dr. Thomas Ambrosio's take on that. So here's your opportunity. I mean, is that, we've worried about that missile that was errant and landed in Poland as being the next escalation. Right. Well, now it seems pretty blatantly attacked a U.S. drone.
Well, yes. So there was a drone flying in international waters, flying in international over international waters. The Russians have said that this is an exclusive zone for the special military operation, which is a phrase, that, of course, that they use. And they initially said that they did not shoot it down, and then, of course, we responded with a video. And the Russians initially supposedly dropped fuel from the jet in front of it to try to bring it down, and then eventually they took it down. This just shows the danger of escalation, and as something that a lot of people are worried about. I'm a little bit less worried about it over time, but this is kind of this tit-for-tat relationship. You're going to send weapons to Ukraine. We're going to shoot down a drone, and we're going to lie about it initially. But then ultimately, we'll see if this goes anywhere. It just shows the potential for escalation that we're flying, that we're operating within close proximity to each other.
237-5948. That's Lenny's studio line. In fact, we got callers on hold for you, Doctor. I'm going to get to one of those and visit with Jim. Jim, thanks for calling. You have a question for Dr. Thomas Ambrosio?
Yeah, you know, one thing, I've been really into a lot of this demographic data lately, and, you know, it seems like the media is pushing to me, I think it's false hype, about the danger of China. Well, according to the recent reports that I've read recently come out, that China is in serious trouble. One reason, because of their one-child policy. They're basically, they have men in their 30s who will probably never have married, never be able to even have relations with women, because there aren't enough women. Their population is rapidly aging. They're talking, I think, by 2060, 2070, their population will be half at 600 billion, and they'll be the oldest population on the planet. And so, I mean, it's like they're facing so many things coming up against them right now. But you never hear about any of this going on. I just want to hear what your take is on it.
Sure. Yeah, there are actually some pretty good geopolitical thinking connecting that with demographics. And what you're saying is correct. China has reportedly overcounted its population by about 100 million people, which is, you know, a little bit under a third of our population as a country. And they are facing a serious demographic crisis, which is connected to the one-child policy, connected to rapid urbanization, but also connected to a highly patriarchal system in which you have selective abortions of female fetuses. And yeah, there is a real danger that they are going to face this long-term crisis. The danger from the international relations geopolitical sense is that if China has the belief that it has peaked in terms of power and it's only looking downward in the future, then they are more likely to act and act when they're in the better position than when they're going to be in a worse position, say 10 years down the line, which could push up any time frame for China doing what it might do in terms of Taiwan.
Jim, appreciate the full. Well, go ahead, Jim. I'll let you respond quick.
Okay, so from what I understand also, too, is another thing you're not hearing about that is, like, the United States has, what, 11 what we call super carriers. Basically, a carrier that's completely capable of taking out a country. And China does not have the ability to send an aircraft carrier more than 1,000 miles from its shore. And all it would take for us is to block them at the key locations and the Indians in the Indian Ocean, and we'd cut them off. Because I think it's like 80% of their energy source in China is imported. And like 60 to 70% of their food is imported. I mean, we could basically cut them off, and there's nothing they could do about it.
And this is one of the reasons why China has really, well, two things. One, China hasn't invested in potentially taking Taiwan because that will allow them geographically to get out of the first island chain of containment, which we, in essence, control. But also, the numbers are a little bit deceiving in terms of, say, how much we spend on military and how much military assets we have, because we are a global power. China, yes, they are interested in the Indian Ocean, but ultimately they only need to be concerned about East Asia. So where they can concentrate their forces, we are spread out throughout the world.
Tyler, can you ask Dr. Ambrosio, why does Europe have such a lack of intestinal fortitude? Putin bullying people didn't manifest itself last year. They have happily funded his exploits / crimes through energy purchases, etc. Your response to that?
Yeah, actually, there are two things. One is Europe tends to be a lot softer when it comes to foreign policy in general, in terms of defense. And at the heart of Europe is, of course, Germany. Germany has now talked recently a big game about increasing their military might, but they have had an Ostpolitik, which is basically a policy of being friends with Russia, connected to World War II, connected to the pacifism that is prevalent within German society, and this lack of kind of geopolitical thinking within German society. And that has become a problem, and it has been a problem forever, and maybe changing now, but we'll have to see. So far, the Germans have made promises, but their proof is in the pudding, and there isn't a whole lot of German pudding right now that we can see.
Yeah, and seeing that Macron has been like the intermediary earlier, at least during this process, was fascinating with France. You got more time for me? We haven't even got to Iraq yet.
Yeah.
Dr. Thomas Ambrosio is here. If you have questions, comments, 35270. You can also call in to 237-5948. You got a Locked In Afternoons Live right here on KFGO. Heart beating
loud. Back to Afternoons Live with Tyler Axness on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO.
Dr. Thomas Ambrosio in studio, North Dakota State University political science professor. We're talking about China and Russia. Somebody had called in, Jim, about population. Somebody asked a response. Isn't China investing heavily in artificial intelligence and robots that might counter their population problems? And wouldn't that become problematic in itself?
Well, yes, the Chinese are investing a lot in AI. Actually, everyone, quite frankly, is, and trying to use have military applications for that. At a certain point, robotics can't get you too far. The Japanese are investing a lot in robotics, even they're going to face their demographic crisis as well. I'm not sure that's going to be our solution. But
the robot wars.
Well, that actually is a potential to have unmanned vehicles going at each other, which would increase the chance of conflict because you're not going to lose any troops that way.
It's a real Skynet situation.
Well, then that's, you read some of the chat, the AI from the chat. It's like, woo, you know, they
not
went right to,
that.
Yeah.
We've got NDSU, Dr. Is it Kate and I was, doctor from the technology department. I forget.
James Caton.
Yeah, that comes in and talks about some of that stuff. It's interesting. Iraq, 20 years ago. I know we've got like 3 minutes left, unless you got more time for me.
I have more time.
Oh,
absolutely.
Perfect. Because shock and awe happened 20 years ago.
Yes.
I remember watching that, sitting on the couch 20 years ago back in Leeds with the night vision going on. And, of course, CNN covering it. it was surreal for me at that time because, you know, I was young enough to not remember other conflicts.
This was your first real
this
war.
This was, yeah. And be concerned about it because, you know, I hadn't lived through anything like that before. And, you know, how much had changed since then, what led to it. And boy, we learned a lot since then, 20 years later.
But I would actually raise a larger question about how much have we truly learned, which we'll probably talk about after the break.
Yeah. Probably,
because we're seeing an interesting debate, but one that's a lot lower key than I would have expected, given the impact of invading Iraq and the 20th anniversary. But it's something that we're going to be grappling with, not necessarily as a country, but the region of the Middle East will probably be grappling with for some time.
Well, and I saw a post about how many servicemen and women that, you know, we've lost and the contractors that we lost and how those families have forever been impacted. And with all that knowledge, I'm surprised that there's been just a lack of coverage.
I have a couple of theories about it. One of them is that we simply want to move on. Another one is that we have bigger fish to fry. And I think, honestly, a third one is that our sitting president voted for it. In the picture of President Bush signing the authorization, which actually I was at a conference this weekend and it was a paper delivered about that, at the end of the aisle, or end of the line of members of Congress smiling about his signature, there was Senator Biden. So he doesn't want to talk about it.
No, let's look the other way, move on. Before we get to the CBS halftime to take Ben, I'm going to get to the phone lines. Ben, you're on with Dr. Thomas Ambrosio and Tyler Axis. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, my question is that one thing that doesn't seem to be added into the equation is the apparent lead of the hypersonics that China maintains. And I'm just curious. The whole idea of hypersonics is creating a speed that you cannot target.
Absolutely. And this is a potentially dangerous weapon in the sense that it makes it more likely that you will use those weapons first, because you use it or lose it. If it can't be stopped, you're more likely to shoot first and ask questions later.
Ben, thanks for the phone call. I got to get everyone caught up with CBS National News. We'll check back in with Paul Jurgens in the KFGO News Center as well. He's got more time for you. We just scratched the surface of Iraq and the lack of coverage. Well, we'll do our due diligence when we come back. Again, phone lines are open to you. We can call in at 237-5948. Number of text messages as well, and you can add your thoughts at 35270. 20 years ago, do you remember watching it unfold on CNN at the time? For me, I remember that vividly, sitting on the couch. We'll break it down. What, if anything, did we learn? That was a nice little tease until he's a professor over here about did we learn enough? But we'll break that all down. I'm Tyler Axis. You are listening to Afternoons Live on 790 AM, 94.1 and 104.7 FM, KFGO.
This is Afternoons Live with Tyler Axness on the mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO.
Monday afternoon rolling on. KFGO time is 4:10. We've got Dr. Thomas Ambrosio, North Dakota State University, International Affairs, a variety of things, political science professor. 20 years after the Iraq War got underway. Shocking. The videos, watching in real time as it happened, was life-changing, I think, for me in the age I was. But here we are. We talked about Joe Biden being in photos back then as a senator, voted for it. Kent Conrad in North Dakota, I think, caught a lot of hell for not supporting the Iraq War at the time.
I don't know if he did vote for it or not.
Nope.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, but here we are. I mean, what's the big takeaway? As we look back 20 years, what should we have learned because
of that? What we should learn is the lessons of World War II are not applicable everywhere. We can't just invade countries and change their entire societies. That there are limits to what we can do politically. We can beat up on lots of countries, obviously. We can use our military might and throw it around. We can even overthrow governments. But that's only half the battle. The true battle is politics. The true battle is ultimately a battle for culture, the political culture of a society. And Iraq, obviously, we know that the invasion of Iraq was a mistake in the sense that we thought they had weapons of mass destruction. I truly believe most of the people in the Bush administration truly believe that. it was already established U.S. policy before Bush even became president to overthrow the government of Iraq. Members of Congress were fully on board and, in fact, were enthusiastic about overthrowing Saddam Hussein even before Bush became president. But in the wake of 9/11, the fear and the lack of willingness to risk anything, because what if we're wrong? We get 9/11 on a grand scale, as Condoleezza Rice said, we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud. And there was kind of a mania after 9/11. And for those who are old enough to remember it, can remember it, those who are young, like my students, have no real idea of how people kind of lost their minds a little bit because of 9/11, which is understandable, but it made us make bad decisions and make bad decisions on a lack of hard information. And this was a war of choice, ultimately. This is a war in which we chose to go to war that we did not have to. And yes, Saddam Hussein was hiding information. He was hiding his weapons of mass destruction program, but it wasn't that he was hiding it because he had the program. He was hiding it because he didn't. And we didn't know that until after we got in there.
We got in. It was interesting. I noted earlier the lack of coverage I've seen today. We have CBS News at the top of the hour, every hour.
Right.
And within that 4 or 5 minute stretch, there was a part that I did hear that I think it was half the population in Iraq has no recollection of life under Saddam Hussein.
Probably, given the population, the age.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes things really interesting because they just know the United States having invaded their country. The United States is still in Iraq. We don't like to talk about that either. We have about 2,500 troops in Iraq, helping them with counterterrorism against ISIS, the remnants of ISIS, which is still floating around. And we're not out of Iraq. Now, by invading, so we can think about the impact of the war domestically. Obviously, a lot of Americans served in Iraq. We have thousands dead, but more than that, people who have come home injured and post-traumatic stress disorder and their families, and that has this larger effect. But the impact in the United States is going to be less than, say, Vietnam, which was kind of this earth-shattering cultural and political and military kind of sea change. It'll be less impactful for the United States domestically. In the region, it's actually quite impactful.
Mm-hmm.
And it has created a vacuum for Iran to increase its influence into a country that was the main bulwark against Iranian influence, which was Iraq. So that has changed the Middle East and given Iran a leg up. But I think when we talk about the larger kind of geopolitics of it, it's actually going to matter very little. It may have accelerated U.S. overexpansion.
Mm-hmm.
But our allies that we had in the Middle East are still our allies in the Middle East. It drained our treasury. It drained our military. And it did take our eye off the prize, which is East Asia. It took our eye off of the rise of China. But I'm not sure we could have at the time done as much as maybe we should have to deal with China. I'm not sure what else we could have done.
That brings us to today about the overexpansion, the treasury being depleted. Some people are saying, well, the dollar, since we got away from gold standard, I can already predict I'll get those messages in. But I think that when we look back 20 years and now the conflicts that are around the world, taking the eye off and then overexpansion and overexerting in areas where I think that's the thing that stands out now, of course, in hindsight a little bit.
That'll be the largest impact in terms of kind of accelerating these trends. We're always overexpanded. We're always going to be overextended. Just simply, that's the great tragedy of being a true superpower and being a global hegemon. But we are lucky in the sense that at least our debt is in our own dollars, and we can manage that. If it wasn't, we'd be in real trouble.
When it comes to the politics here domestically, and you saw it play out in the last two presidential elections ago, I think 2016, because you had then candidate Donald Trump saying, "I never supported the war in Iraq." So is it even, when we go forward here, is it even going to come up as, did you support or not support the war in Iraq?
I think that's less going to be the issue than it really gave a boost to the restrainer foreign policy view that was always kind of there in the Republican Party, and Trump is the one who brought it to the brought it to the main stage. We'll have to see if that continues, you know, obviously, depending on what happens.
Right.
But more than that, there is a real still a backlash against that. So when I said there was, in terms of lessons learned from Iraq, you have people who are like, well, that was a problem, but we could still do it in these other cases and be kind of interventionist. And you have those who are, and I know someone, I'm very disappointed in him, in fact, a friend of mine who learned no lessons from Iraq. Like, just it was not a problem. Yeah, that didn't go so well, but we could still do it in the future. You have some people are saying, yeah, maybe we should be restrained, but there is something that which President Obama's foreign policy advisor called the blob, which is the foreign policy establishment in D.C. That's still interventionist. It's alliance between the kind of neoconservatives on the right and then the liberal interventionists on the left that still want to get involved.
Well, what's interesting, good, back to the future, meaning today, you have Ron DeSantis again, running, potentially being a presidential candidate, talking about Ukraine, saying, look, this, you know, we don't need to be right. intervene here. And you can see the backlash that he's received from that very that notion.
And his statement was actually quite mild. It was kind of trying to triangulate between the true restrainers and the interventionists. Mm-hmm. Trying to say this is probably not in our strategic interest. We should be seeking some type of a resolution to the conflict. And even that, people hit him hard.
Yeah.
Part of that is, well, political in the sense that you can kind of try to paint him as a Russian, you know, doing Putin's bidding. But I think part of it is it comes from a place in which there's still this interventionist view in the United States that Iraq, by not remembering Iraq and remembering the problems of Iraq, we may be doomed to repeat it sometime in the future.
I think we're going to leave it there, Doctor, unless there's anything else you need to go before I let you go.
That sounds good. Things are always changing.
Yeah, well, sure, I have no doubt. Back. You'll be back in. Yeah. You just answer when we call. And it's amusing how more we're getting people saying, we need to hear from Dr. Ambrosio.
That's
so
great.
You got a following out there. Dr. Thomas Ambrosio, our guest again, North Dakota State University political science professor. I always appreciate your time. We'll chat again soon.
Thanks for having me.
Your thoughts are coming in to 35270. I'll come back to that. We'll talk about sports, recap the weekend that was. Adam Thielen, a Carolina Panther. I'm all right with that. Are you? We'll break it down when we come back. Monday afternoons, wrap it up shortly right here on KFGO. Now we're never kind.